The MCG is in sight now. This massive stadium that has hosted so many famous sporting events.
It's on its way from Barmer through. A few little how-do-you-dos. It's not a tea party out there, but there's no need to make it like Stadium Hall, fellas, so keep it cool.
The pain is temporary, but glory lasts forever.
Barmer's there, a tease. Beautiful. Beautiful nail bomb.
Because this is something to savour. Something to remember for the rest of your life.
On Hungry for Sport, Friday Sports Chat with Dave Colbert and Neil Barr.
I've got a bunch of great prizes to give away to our best callers as well, 9429 1116, including the footy cards, of course. You get the collector cards, you get the five packs of cards, you get the album, you get the poster. Beautiful Australian Bataki legs of ham as well, always available from Woolworths and Coles, and games of golf down at Keysborough Golf Club. You love it down there. It's a sandbelt course, of course, and it's challenging layout to test even the professionals and any club golfer alike, and also a gold pass to the Comics Lounge as well. As we welcome Neil Baum. G'day, Neil.
KB. Dave.
How are
you? Going well, DC.
I say that before you introduce.
Oh, yes, you're going well. DC's
how
going
are we?
Well. Going very, very well.
That's good to hear.
Can we have an update on your legal battles with the meat company?
You're not going to believe this.
Is there a barbecue, a free barbecue?
Well, there was almost a free barbecue because this week, can you believe this? I was out of the office and I arrive in and there's a little package on the floor. Three little boxes, actually. And what are they? 10 kilograms of thin sausages, four 250-gram rump steaks, and 5 kilograms of ribs, just in a box, got delivered. They were returned, KB.
So they've tried to buy you off with sausages.
They could have said, here's a little thank you. They didn't have a card or anything with it. So I don't know what the purpose was, but...
This means you've got them on the back foot.
It wasn't...
You had a fair idea.
It wasn't accepted.
You've got them on the back foot.
I don't. As I said, I might be a vegetarian. They don't know. Anyway, the poor old courier guy had to do a U-turn and come back and collect it. Anyway, so it's continuing, KB.
You've had a better
10 kilograms of sausages. My commentary in that iconic moment, yes, of the Commonwealth Games with Kieran McCann. By the way, I've extended my legal action to SEN for using it in that unbelievable opener. Is worth 10 kilograms of thin sausages.
Those famous words, pain is temporary, but glory lasts forever.
Well.
Did you make that up on the spot, or was it something that you'd already thought of?
Overnight.
You had it written down in front of you, and you thought, now, if something really good happens, I'm going to say, pain is temporary, but glory lasts forever.
I've used that line a few times over the years. It started actually, I'm sure I didn't invent it. It was actually a saying, we used to have a thing called the Beer Olympics, right, at the Sydney University Athletic Club, where we would go along, club night, and you'd have the Beer Olympics. So it'd be a range of games that you'd play. And one of the games actually involved quite a bit of pain and suffering. And our team chant in Team Australia, we were called, was that pain is temporary, but glory lasts forever. So that would get you to the, boys, pain is temporary, but glory lasts forever. Get them!
Where did this fit into the alcohol responsible policy?
it was absolutely responsible. We were drinking lemonade. And so pain is temporary, glory lasts forever was a... No, although I did in commentary, Hutto's big on this, you'll never admit it, but, before an Olympic Games, you have the heads of the sport department get you all together and give you... instructions on what you're going to do, etc. And once I was told in my early days that the best ad-libs are well prepared. And so they encourage you, if you're commentating, if Bruce is commentating Cathy Freeman's sport, it's actually worthwhile spending a little bit of time thinking what you might say.
Certain scenario.
If Cathy has a stunning victory, if Cathy gets beaten. So you're not just making it up on this. Obviously, commentary, live sport commentary is spontaneous.
Spontaneous, yeah.
But Jumping Jai, It's Time to Fly... came to me.
That was your famous comment.
Came to me while I was, busily training for the marathon in Sydney, and you've got a lot of time to think. Jumping Jai, It's Time to Fly. Oh, I might use that. You know what? I've had some of the great lines of all time I've forgotten to actually use.
If you've heard of a great line, give us a buzz, because 9429116, if you've heard of a great line in sporting commentary, because, Jumping Jai, Time to Fly was the Sydney Olympic Games. He won the silver medal, Jai Taurima. And he was beaten by
Ivan Pedroso in one of the great...
From Mexico, was he? Or Brazil or somewhere?
Cuba. Yeah. On his final jump. Jai's leading 8:49 and Pedroso jumped 8:54 to win. Unbelievable victory.
So he came in and you said, Jumping Jai, time to fly.
It's time to fly.
It was a great line.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You've got a lot of great lines.
It's all gone downhill. And that I wonder what that would have been worth, that line, because this is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life, is worth 10 kilograms of thin sausages.
Jamie Jai, time to fly. That must be worth, milkshake or something.
If you're thinking of using that in an ad campaign, give us a call at Jump Media so we can negotiate a fee up front.
Yeah, a couple of hamburgers.
Free Neil, trip with Lufthansa.
Neil, are you having second thoughts yourself, Neil, about hurting your own legacy?
What?
Are you having second thoughts about hurting your legacy?
What are you talking about?
Your legacy to football and what you've done in the game at Richmond and also down at Geelong, and you moved back to Collingwood. That performance against the Bulldogs was absolutely shocking. Does anyone know?
I was hoping this was far enough away from that.
Put out on the park against the Bulldogs? I'd love to hear from Collingwood fans about that.
Neil,
what happened? I mean, honestly, Neil, you got smashed by the Bulldogs. They looked fantastic.
When was that? That was ages ago, wasn't it? To be fair, I understand you wanted to forget it, Neil, because it's an embarrassment to Collingwood.
But it does ask the question, where's the Pies going?
Of course it does. But what it also does is says, well, it's NAB 3. How do you take these things seriously? But your performance, the way you play, is non-negotiable. And we were terrible. And the Bulldogs were fantastic, I must say. I hadn't really done much sort of thinking on how they were playing, because it didn't really matter that much.
Looks like no one at Collingwood did.
No, all of that would have been done, but I hadn't really given it much thought. I knew they were going okay, but they were very, very good, very good. Which is, it's trying to mask the fact that we were terrible. We were terrible, but so fortunately in footy and the game, we haven't lost any points. We haven't lost anything yet, so we've got to
I reckon a lot of supporters have dropped off.
You wouldn't think that supporters would respond to just one result in
the bizarre thing about that was that every other team in the NAB challenge started at quite low base and then last week were on fire, maybe except St Kilda. Yep. They didn't have a great game against Hawthorn.
No.
But Collingwood started, remember they'd won the premiership, they had that big queue down, they were selling grand final tickets before.
Correct.
You know, you could pre-order your grand final seat, you could decide where you wanted to go, they were selling the celebration.
Eddie said they were ready to win the premiership.
Memorabilia was underway, all of that stuff.
This is all very funny you saying that, but don't perpetuate the myth. Poor old Ed said.
Well, he said we're in a premiership window. Did he actually say that?
We're in a premiership window?
I think he did. We'll find
you
it.
You think he did.
We'll find it. He said we've got the right age bracket. We've got the right 23 years of age when we won premiership back in 1865 or whatever it was. And he said we're ready to go.
Well, of course we're ready to go. Everyone's ready to go.
So Steve, who's out there on the road dodging traffic. G'day, Steve.
Yeah, g'day guys. Got a couple of things. Just want to talk about Geelong's season launch.
Yep.
Fantastic times. Good to see Steve Hocking brought the club back to the people.
Beautiful.
Mm.
That's what he does. You know, it's a people's club, Geelong, isn't it? Always has been. You still there, Steve?
Yeah, I'm still here. And also, I've just been out watching Hawthorn train. James Frawley's been carried off on a stretcher. I think Barmy's put the...
Are you serious, Steve?
No, he's not serious.
Are you serious, Steve?
Can't you tell that he's lacking intelligence, this chap?
A bit of mirth. Hang on. Are you serious about James Frawley, Steve?
I am serious about James Frawley and Barmy. Look in the mirror if you want intelligence.
Has he got carried off? Good line, Steve.
Don't use them all up. You've got the rest of the day to go.
Barmy, we've got breaking news, and the news... man here, KB, wants to find out what's happened to James Frawley.
Nothing's happened to James Frawley.
Well, Steve, cross your heart, hope to die, that James Frawley got carried off on a stretcher.
Got carried off on a stretcher and Clarko was cursing Barmy.
Okay. Right. I don't know where that takes
me. I think we'll wait for confirmation from the club.
Here's Eddie
that.
Saying Collingwood's going to win the premiership.
I'd like to say to you that the team that we're going to celebrate tonight, the fabled 1990 Premiership team, had an average age of 23 when we won that flag. In 2015, our average age of players is 23. So it's never too early and it's never too late. Don't think about tomorrow. Season 2015 is fair and square on the agenda for us to do the best we possibly can.
And we will win the Premiership.
Oh, I missed that bit. Did they cut that bit out?
But he said everything. That's what he said, Neil. Read between the lines. We're all set. We're ready to go. It's now or never.
Yeah, and we will win the premiership.
And we'll win the premiership.
Are you related to that, Steve? I reckon you might be brothers.
Gee, Barmy,
people say Kevin couldn't be as silly as he looks. I say that's true, but it appears that he is.
We'll take a break. We're coming back with Neil Barm and DC Dave Cobbett. Got a bunch of great prizes to give away, including the footy cards. You might even get Neil Barm on the footy cards.
If you're unlucky.
Get the Bataki Australian Legs of Ham. You're off to play some golf down at Keysborough. Get a gold pass for you and a friend. Get along to the Comics Lounge, of course. You enjoyed that. Always at thecomicslounge.com.au. So back with DC and Barmy. Welcome back, DC. Dave Cobbett has joined us, Mr. Delusional, and Neil Barm, of course, who's regretting the fact that he's back at Collingwood as the world's greatest football operations manager. Should have stayed at the Catch. Johnny's on the road. G'day, John.
Yeah, g'day, KB and the boys. How are we?
We're going great.
You were talking about a memorable commentary, and I've got two standouts from Peter McCannaback in the old Commodore Cup days.
Yes. Macca was there.
Yeah, one of them was, if all players had red hair like Fabia, gee, that'd be a lot easier to tell apart. And the other one is, if you put Michael Moncrief's head on that guy's shoulders, he'd look exactly like Michael Moncrief.
Don Scott used to do all that commentating, didn't he, with Macca?
Yeah, he was. And
Sandy Roberts. And that was Sunday football when we had no other Sunday football as far as AFL was concerned, when the reserves used
to play.
And
the appetite for footy was so strong that we just used to watch the Commodore Cup.
The Commodore Cup.
Yeah, that's a good one. If you want to read great commentary lines, yeah, Murray Walker always had some good ones, but David Coleman, the British commentator, was always very good. You know, as Ovet strides away and shows us his class.
George is in Northcote. G'day, Georgie.
G'day, guys. Just two things. One, first the football comments and then the cricket. Football comments, like Jordan for that Army Reserve Cup with John Burke.
He's done well for himself.
Yep. And the other thing was...
Take the boy off. Is that what he said?
And the other thing with cricket, Melbourne turning it on again, I think it's fantastic, Australia and New Zealand. They'll pack their house in, and I remember... when Pakistan played England and they had nearly 80,000 people. So Melbourne proves again it's the sporting capital of Australia.
Well, they're talking about for the cricket, the record I think is 91,112. I think that was in Boxing Day about 15 months ago, they said today in the paper. So 91,112, and they're thinking they're going to give that a nudge with Australia taking on New Zealand.
You would think so. How good was the match between New Zealand and South Africa? It was unbelievable how good it was. You know, for the last hour, it was the roller coaster of what team was going to win, who was in front. You know, oh well, the South Africans have got this. Oh no, New Zealand have got this. No, the South Africans have got it. It was unbelievable. The Australian win last night was a little bit easier,
pedestrian,
but still, well,
we knew we were going to win,
but not instantaneously. You know, they scored a competitive total and. The Indians, when Kohli came out to bat, you still thought that they were a fair chance. Him going out was a bit of a setback. But, and, you know, the best thing we know, as we know, KB, about the Cricket World Cup is that there are a number of kids that are going to celebrate their 21st birthday this week, and they've seen the entire tournament. So they've had a fantastic celebration, and it's finally coming to an end. And the last few weeks of it has been really good, really good. And I'm sure Melbourne will put on a fantastic display.
You wonder how we're going to fill it when you... The 50 or 60,000 Indians are probably not going to go. And hasn't that
I think they're probably going to have tickets.
That's not happening. But it hasn't been just fantastic, that kind of support. Like, you've got two teams, mate. No one's got anything to do with it. You fill up the place. It's fantastic.
Well, I think they got 87,000, wasn't it, for India-Pakistan?
Yeah,
the big challenge this week is what week do the Centrelink payments come through? Because that'll get all the New Zealand fans there that are here.
On
unemployment benefits. Well, that's what they... And can they get down... If it was in Sydney, the New Zealanders would be fine. They'd just migrate Bondi Beach out to, you know, the Sydney cricket ground and away they go. That's how it works, isn't it?
Before we go...
I like New Zealanders. It's just the demographics of New Zealanders, that a lot of New Zealanders are here, KB. They don't necessarily like it in New Zealand, so they've come to live in Australia.
So should they barrack for Australia?
I wouldn't have thought so. Why would they?
Well, if they like living here rather than New Zealand.
Yeah, but you can live here and not be a... If you've still got your New Zealand passport.
Haven't they produced some wonderful sports stars, New Zealand, particularly in athletics?
Have they?
Going
John
back,
Walker.
Remember Peter Snell?
Yep, I remember
Murray
him.
Hulberg?
Yep.
John Walker. I mean, all world record holders, 1,500 metres and the 5 and the 10,000 metres.
They've got a good 1,500 metre man now, Nick Willis. And they've got a very, very good shot putter, Valerie Villey, who's won...
Everything. Now, just on that, before we get to our callers, because you told us a few weeks ago that there was a shocking thing taking place in athletics, and it was to do with Jared Tallon, the Australian who's won 2 silver medals at the Olympic Games, and he's been beaten by a Russian and maybe an Italian, was it?
Yep, Alex Schwarzer
and Sergei Kudryavkin. Been found to be drug cheats.
Cheating. Yep.
And at that stage, it didn't look like, for some reason we couldn't understand, that Jared Tallon maybe would be given the gold medal because people have cheated.
Yep.
Now, my understanding is there's been a protest put in.
So the IAAF have appealed the RUSADA, which is the Russian anti-doping agency, decision regarding the time frame of the nullification, is that a word? The nullifying of the results from some of those Russians. Richard Ings tweeted something during the week about it, saying it's very rare that these sorts of appeals are successful, so maybe there's not hope there. But Jared Tallon should be a 2-time Olympic walking champion.
Gold
he
medalist.
Was beaten by Alex Schwarzer, who didn't test positive at the time, and but tested positive subsequently. And to be fair to Alex Schwarzer, there's no evidence to suggest that when he won in 2008 he was taking drugs. Mm. But you know, you wouldn't have to be a rocket scientist to work out how he was successful in his career.
So we're led to believe that after he won a gold medal, he started taking drugs.
Of course. This is the way it all
That doesn't make happens. Sense, does it?
No. You only take drugs after you win 15 stages of the Tour de France to try and keep winning them. Of course. So we'll see what happens there. But the door is back open, and you know, I'm hopeful that Jared Tallon becomes the Olympic champion, because Valerie Villey came second in the shot put in London.
Yes.
And the girl who won, Ostapchuk, from Belarus, I think, she subsequently tested positive. And you deny them, you know, Valerie Villey got her medal presented in some, in front of a rugby crowd in New Zealand, which was wonderful. Mm. But, you know, the moment of actually being on the dais at the Olympic venue with the flame, etc., was denied. It's a disgrace.
Why haven't, the Olympic Committee given Raelene Boyle her gold medals as well, when Renata Stecker, who beat her in the 100 and 200 by, you know, a bee's breath, at the Olympic Games, has put her hand up, and she was part of the East Germans, and
I just don't think
all
the
drug taking. Why haven't they?
They just haven't had the courage to do it. And it's politics.
But these
KB.
People have put their hand up and said, you know, politics. I was on drugs. I was part of the regime.
Politics,
and I was,
because
and I got all these drugs pumped into me.
Someone's going to be up to be voted in for the next thing. There's a games to be awarded. The politics of that stuff doesn't allow people to have the courage to fight for those things amongst their fraternity.
But it's been acknowledged that Renata Stecker, she's acknowledged it herself, that she was part of the East German program of taking drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So Raelene Boyle's been deprived of the 100 and the 200 metres at the Olympic Games.
Yep.
And it's a disgrace.
An absolute disgrace. And that's why do you think I come in here every week and talk so passionately about this sort of stuff? We've got the situation this week where Justin Gatlin, a 2-time cheat, he should never set foot on an athletics track ever again. He is a complete, filthy, lying cheat. He's still going to come back. And Nike have signed him up to a sponsorship. Have you seen those things? Just Dope It is, you know, it's everywhere on social media. You know, what a disgrace. He shouldn't be allowed anywhere near an athletics track. Twice. He's 2 bands, and he's still running. Give me a break.
Famous lines, commentary lines, not as good as Dave Colbert, but this is the famous late, great Slug Jordan.
Oh, he just whacked the umpire. Hey!
Oh, no!
That's unbelievable.
Oh, boy.
I'd take him off now, the boy.
Well, he's got it.
You've got to take the boy off.
Very smart.
Definitely.
You've got to take the boy off.
He's leaving the ground.
You've just got to take him off. You just... Oh, look, he's going to punch the fella around the
fence
now.
He's going to someone in the stand. He's into someone in the stand.
Oh, he's giving him one too.
Yep.
Yeah, he's done well.
So there's the late, great Slug
Jordan.
I don't
think that's a case of best ad-libs are well prepared. I don't think you go to the ground thinking, I wonder what I'll say if someone belts the umpire, and then when he's going off, he jumps the fence and gives one to a bloke in the stand. Oh, he's done well.
Pete joins us from Footy's Grey. G'day, Pete.
Hey, g'day, boys. I wonder if you remember this line. Well, it's like throwing cream puffs at a brick wall.
I reckon that would have been TV ringside.
You're right there.
And it was
Jack Little?
No. Ron was the broadcaster, and the famous guy at ringside, his name will come to me, but you better give it to me beforehand.
I think it is Jack Little.
No, it wasn't Jack Little. No, not on TV ringside with Ron Casey. Oh, gee, I can see his face. He used to say things like he couldn't knock a sick parrot off his perch. things like that. Oh, what was his name? Very, very famous boxing sort of commentator.
Not Gus Mercurio.
No. Much older than Gus at that particular point.
He said things like, he's throwing him from the T-Bob seats.
That's it, that sort of stuff. Look, we need... our fans will tell us.
Yeah, we'll
I should
find
know it.
Well, Jack Styring used to have plenty of lines
away,
like just, that, didn't he? Out in front and bearing his molars to the breeze.
We'll find out who that... Oh, gee, I had his name then. I was just about to give it. Anyway, Dave joins us from Frankston. G'day, Dave.
G'day, Larry, Mo and Curly. How are you?
Going well.
That's good.
Which one's which?
I think I might
don't
be
they
curly.
All have hair? I think I might be Curly.
I was going to say, you don't have to be Curly, but you know, the only one who's got any hair, so... yeah, got another one on the football commentary.
Yes.
Not a famous one, but a pretty funny one. Once when Peter Bell was running into open goal, Sandy Roberts yelled out, "Ding dong bell, pussies in the well."
Ding dong bell, pussies in the well.
Well, yeah, when he's playing for Freo. Yeah.
Well, it's a great story, Peter Bell, because I think he was the first player ever signed by the Dockers.
Right.
And he played one game, I think, with the Dockers, and then... They gave him the swish show, and then he went to North Melbourne and became an absolute star and a premiership player and won their best and fairest. And then they paid a fortune to get him back there to actually be captain. And, I tell you what, I'm still trying to find out that name of that commentator.
Merv Williams?
Merv Williams, that's it. Who sent that through? Magnificent.
Well, someone says
well done.
Merv Lewis?
No, Merv Williams. Well done. Merv Williams, of course, at Ron Casey and TV Ringside.
Yep.
He had all those famous boxing
When was TV
cliches.
Rings? When did that used to be on?
It was on a Monday night, I think, from memory. I think it was a Monday night.
On Channel
7. Channel 7.
So, Ron Casey, let's have boxing on Monday night.
It was definitely on Monday night because...
No, early 70s. Was it early
70s? Oh, in the 60s too. 60s as well.
Yeah.
Because...
Was it broadcast live from where? Coming
Festival,
to you live
Festival
from
Hall.
Festival Hall. Yeah. It's TV
no,
ringside.
No, I got a feeling it might have been from the Channel 7 studio.
Really?
Dorcas
Street.
If you went along to TV Ringside, give us a buzz. For some reason, I keep thinking it was held at the Channel 7 studio.
And was it in front of a live studio
Live audience.
Yeah.
But it was certainly in the days of, in the early 60s because Lionel Rose and Johnny Famichon sparred on TV Ringside, a little three-round or four-round spar.
And who would actually fight? Who would be the big names?
Famous people came out of TV Ringside. Tony Mundine, Anthony Mundine's father, was a star. Kahu Mahanga came across from New Zealand, came across and...
Didn't like it over there, knocked
out Tony Mundine in one of the biggest upsets on TV Ringside.
Yeah.
And they used to make their own stars, those guys sort of coming through and they'd bring out people from England and occasionally from America and...
This is different to the... Because didn't they have wrestling on TV?
That was Channel 9.
Was that Jack Little doing
Channel
the wrestling?
Channel 9 with Teddy Whitten.
And
what was that
called?
Yeah, well, that was like drama as opposed to boxing was actually
real
serious. Yeah. I mean, not that
what was the wrestling
series,
called?
But it was.
What was it actually called?
World Championship Wrestling. Yeah, World Championship Wrestling. Yeah.
And Teddy Whitten.
Teddy Whitten was doing the commentary
with Jack Little.
I'm pretty certain
they
Jack was
there.
They
should play replay of those things. You should see that on...
Well, we might see if we can get up Google a bit of Teddy maybe doing the wrestling.
Right.
Don't forget Murray Wiedemann, Collingwood's captain,
played
on a Saturday, and then he used to go to Festival Hall and wrestle on Saturday nights because he was getting 10 times more money as a wrestler. He was doing tag team wrestling. I think the guy he wrestled
with... Mario Milano.
Well, I think he wrestled with a guy, I think, called Solvado, I reckon.
Right.
Solvado. I don't know what other name he had.
Yeah.
But Murray
Wiedemann. Might have been Johnny Salvato's relation.
Well, it was some name like that anyway. Again, Collingwood fans would tell us. But Collingwood then got a bit worried that their captain was going to get hurt wrestling on a Saturday night and wouldn't be able to play the following Saturday.
Oh, there's some going. Merv Williams, he's got as much chance as a grasshopper in a pen full of turkeys.
He had all those old sayings.
See, that'd be Dennis Cometti, he may not want to admit it, but he's lines.
He's channeling Merv Williams.
His lines, he's got them, he's thinking about them, and he just waits for, he's gone in optimistically and came out misty optically. Those things just happen. And I'll use that one day. You don't make that up on the spot, that sort of genius.
We'll take a break. Sports Central coming up, and we'll come back and we'll fly through our callers because we've got a lot of people out there got some great memories also of TV Ringside.
Here they are now. First round, Mahanga in the white trunks, Mundine. In the dark trunks.
Hard right now by Mahanga as he hooks Mundine again. He piles in with left and right. So the hard right hand by Mahanga. Mundine ducks away, gets hooked to the left hook, comes off, runs into the right hand again. Look at Mundine. Another right hand, and down goes Mundine. Six, seven, eight, nine. It's all over, and Kahuma.
There's the great Ron Casey doing the broadcasting in those days of TV ringside, and probably the most classic and most remembered fight in the history of TV ringside, when 19-year-old Tony Mundine, the big rising star, undefeated rising star of Australian boxing, got knocked out by that Kiwi who came across.
I love those old TV. I was watching the History of Australia the other night on Channel 7, and they had it was about the Melbourne Olympic Games, and Alf Potter directing.
Yes.
He'd never directed a sporting event or live anything in his life. And he sat down, and three cameras, they had to move them around. So there's three cameras here, and then they take the three cameras to the swimming pool, and they take the three cameras to the cycling, and then they take the three cameras to the athletics. And he had no idea what he was doing, and he nailed it. And it was sensational just to, you know, relive how that was done. The, you know, television, brand new. People are buying it to sit in their house and, you know, or go to or stand in the street and watch it.
We used to take a seat, and you'd sit out the front of a shop like Veal's in those days, and they'd have the TV behind the window with a bit of audio coming out with a speaker, and people would sit in the street with all rugged up and, you know, with a thermos and a coffee and all that sort of stuff.
And watch it, and watch the Olympics.
Kenny's in Werribee, wants to talk about TV ringside. G'day, Ken.
G'day there, KB, Barney and DC.
G'day.
One of my greatest memories of TV ringside was when it first started down at Channel 7. And I used to live just down in Dorcas Street, and I was only a young teenager. And we used to wander up there every Monday night and have a look at the fights. On this one special night, Leo Berry from Richmond, he was coaching a young boy, and he was fighting somebody from Collingwood. I don't know who the trainer and the boy was. But I think the boy from Richmond got disqualified. So anyway, they came into the ring. The two trainers came into the ring, Leo Berry and the other fella, and they were arguing. And next minute, the trainers are into it. So they're punching on. And in those old days, that Richmond and Collingwood were not good friends. So what happened then is all the crowd started to jump into the ring. The Richmond and Collingwood, all the louts from the area, they've all jumped into the ring. They've started punching on. The whole ring was just under siege, and the ring collapsed.
That would have been Collingwood lout, so I don't think there would have been anyone from Richmond getting
Richmond
involved.
The boys were just protecting themselves.
Just
mate.
Protecting themselves, Ken.
I'm loving these move, Williams. He's as busy as a one-armed wallpaper.
He had some classics.
He's been hit everywhere but the roof of his mouth and the soles of his feet. He wouldn't have invented this. He's like the, you know, the boy with the wheelbarrow. He's got the job ahead of him. He wouldn't have invented that. Was he the inventor of that
saying? I think he was. Robert's from Coburg. G'day, Rob.
Sure.
G'day, Robert.
Yes, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for joining us along with DC and Barmy.
Yes, my dad's name was Norm Foster. He was the matchmaker for Stadiums Limited, which had which controlled Festival Hall in the fight game. And my word, it was an experience growing up having the luxury of meeting all the boxers and all the overseas boxers and the interstate boxers, because Dad had mum and pick him up from the airport. And they always stayed at the Downtowner in Rathdown Street.
Downtown.
Every Sunday morning, Dad would take us around to the gyms because he had to survey all the local boxing scene. So there was a gym underneath Festival Hall too, where Famo's trainer...
Ambrose Palmer, yes.
And what an experience. I'm a little bit stuck for words at the moment, but if you've got any questions, I'll be able to...
What was the atmosphere like behind the scenes? Was it, you know, were they into it, or was it just all show? They were just great mates, and then they'd just go out and try and punch the suitcase out of each other.
Look, I'm a cricket and football guy, firstly, but the one thing that struck me about boxing, which I still hold seriously to, is, well, back then, there was a code of... Because they're from a different era, there's a code of conduct on how to be a man or a gentleman, really. For example, at Dad's wake at the Coburg RSL, he died in 96, I said to, there was a number of box ex-champions there, was Famo, Lionel Rose, Fennec, I'm not sure if Fennec was there, Barry Michaels was there. It was Barry in his typical typical way at the wake, he zipped out for half an hour, and I said to him, where did you go? And he said, I just zipped out to get a haircut. And he came back with his haircut. But I asked him, I said, in all the do's I've ever been to, I've never seen one blue. And Barry leaned over to me and he said, well, who'd be game to start one?
Yeah, very, very true. But boxing, they do stick together, and particularly when they lose one of their own, there's a great camaraderie there. Rob, they're great memories, and I can remember the name of Norm Foster now as being the matchmaker for a lot of those big fights at Festival Hall and also on TV Ringside. Quick break. We're coming back. More of your calls. Chris and John, your next cabs in the rank. We better find out a bit about Collingwood just before we get back to Chris and John and the rest of the callers. Collingwood, of course, Levi Greenwood, Neil, out for the season, is he?
What?
Out for the season, Levi Greenwood.
What season's that?
2015.
He's out for some of it because he's got.
How many weeks do you think he'll be out for, Neil?
No, I won't guess on weeks. Cause
short, medium, or long?
If I get it long. If I get it wrong, you'll pick me.
There you go. He's out for the long term.
He's got a small. Well, it'll 6 weeks he's got to keep off it. Okay. And then after that, he's got to train. So what
10 weeks? 10, 12 weeks?
I'm not actually putting a time on it.
10 or 12 weeks, I'm saying, Neil.
You can say what you
like. Bad luck.
But you wouldn't know.
Being
so
a top recruit. 10 or 12 weeks. You had some good news yesterday. The Pies won by 118 points against Richmond at Punt Road, a VFL game there. And my understanding is you had some players who stood up and played okay. I reckon all these guys will get a game in round one. Broomhead, DeGoey, Carnesis, Witts and Seedsman all played good.
Yeah, and there was a couple of others who had just come back as well. Moore and Marsh both played
Darcy Moore,
their first game. So, and they were both okay. So,
any of those guys get a game, would they, Neil, in round one? Would Broomhead get a game? DeGoey, Carnesis, Witts, Seedsman?
I've all got a story to tell, but they've missed. Some of them missed a bit of footy, some of them haven't. But they're all in the chopper, but I don't know who's going to play yet.
What about Collingwood? They've got a big media announcement to be made, haven't they, DC?
I think that they're one of the best in the business in this, in fact, which pains me. Can't believe I'm saying it. But their online, the stuff that they do for their members, aside from Family Day,
it's been cancelled.
They're unbelievable. In fact, they're launching it today, what they're doing daily. Online shows, social media content, through to radio, publishing, photography, and they're launching it. In fact, they're launching it now. Already
yeah,
launched
they are.
It.
Yes, they're very. Barmy
didn't
big
get an invitation. So they're unbelievable what they do for their, for their members. I used to have a Collingwood member work for us, and the stuff that she got sent every day from Collingwood was very, very impressive. And it's one of the reasons why they've got 785,000 members. Because they look after them and share the inside machinations of the club with their members, and they're the leaders of the pack when it comes to that.
They can go overboard, though. I mean,
that's why I don't have to say anything.
Their media alert, Neil, is 2015 Collingwood Media will connect with its supporters in a capacity unrivaled by any Australian sporting club.
Now, that's true.
That's a big call.
Well, I actually think that's true.
It's a big call.
It might be a big call, but and as I said, it pains me to say it when the Collingwood are doing something well. But in that department, they're doing it very well, KB.
Chris is on the road. G'day, Chris.
Oh, g'day, boys. How are you all going?
Chris, we're going great.
Look, I just remember saying some sporting comedies. As a kid, I used to lay in bed and listen to the Ashes over in England back in the old days with John Arlott,
yes,
commentating on the BBC. And I remember one particular I was listening, and very funny. So my accent's not very good, but he said, and as the 2:15 leaves Birmingham, so does McCosker, caught not bolts, no two. And I used to think that was brilliant.
Well, he was famous, wasn't he, John Arlott, as a cricket commentator. Some people say the best the world's ever seen, and a great wit and a great knowledge of the game. So a lot of people over the years, just talk so highly of John Arlott. I think he finished up, he went and lived on that, is it the Jersey? Is it Jersey?
Ireland.
Ireland of Jersey. Yep. I think that's where he actually lived. I think he lived on the Isle of Jersey, and I think he drank a lot of red wine.
Mm, good luck to him.
Johnny is in Croydon. G'day, John.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Just a bit of athletics for David Culbert.
Yep.
I heard that Brandon Stark, the younger brother Mitch Stark, jumped 2.30 the other day. But a couple of months ago, there was a young lad from one of the Melbourne grammar schools who jumped some height. I thought it was more than that, actually.
No, it wasn't more than that. And his name escapes me, that young fella from Melbourne Grammar, I think, in the sport and the school's competition. I don't know what happened for him to the rest of the season, but he jumped 2:20-something, I think, or 2:18 or 2:20. But you're right, Brandon Stark jumped 2:30 couple of weeks ago in Sydney, and his brother Mitch, of course, playing in the Australian cricket team. And the Australian Championships are on this weekend, KB,
you're kidding.
In Brisbane.
Truly.
Don't know about that. You're not across that.
I haven't seen any.
Have you done a big preview?
Haven't seen.
What have you been doing all week?
Well, I haven't seen any anything to alert us that the Australian Championships are on.
Brandon, so he qualified for the World Championships in Beijing, and which is good. It's a good jump, 230. It's highest for a long time. I think it's the highest since Tim Forsyth.
234?
Slim Tim.
234.
236, I reckon, Slim's.
Beaten on a countback for the gold medal at the Olympic Games. Yep. We'll take a break, coming back with DC and Barney. Some of the SMS is saying Joel Baden, Melbourne Grammar high jumper, says Eric in Malvern. So maybe he's one to watch as a young
kid. One to watch, absolutely.
Maybe he can achieve great things, because we've got a young girl, Eleanor
Patterson. She is really good. She had a couple of attempts at the Australian record, which is held equally by Vanessa Brown Ward and Alison Inverarity. Still hold it, 196, 198. One of the two.
But just a young girl who won the Commonwealth Games gold medal instead of going to the juniors championships.
Yep.
Flying up today to the Australian champs, boys, my fiance is running in the 400 metres. Get on board, Jess Gooley.
Yeah, well, Jess Gooley, she ran a fantastic 400 last week. It was one of the races of the night. It was really close. It didn't run really fast, but it was wonderful. KB, we're not going to be here next week. Good luck to Richmond in the opening game.
We don't need luck in the opening game. In fact, I'm thinking of coming in and working on Good Friday next week, because I do want to talk about the Tigers beating Carlton, because, as you know, it'll be a walkover.
It'll be nice to see.